I'd like to start by just going around quickly and everyone just for a minute, say a little bit about, just introduce yourself and why you wanted to learn more about meditation. Some of you I already know because you've been in previous coming home cohorts. But why are you here? We can just start popcorn style. And jump in.
Start.
Great.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, perfect. So I'm Sheila and I live in Ithaca, New York. And I've been interested in learning about meditation for a while. And I've done a little bit of practicing on my own, nothing formal. So I think it's just managing day-to-day stress. It's, just getting through the day and
Yeah.
the weeks. So yeah, that's why I'm here.
Awesome. Thank you, Sheila. Welcome.
I'll go next. I took the first cohort coming home. Was that the first?
It was in
I
the
took the
spring. Yeah, it was the
yeah.
second. Yes.
Okay, the second. So and I really like the community and the building of the practice with other people. I think it strengthens the, I don't know, the power of meditation. So that's why I'm here.
Nice.
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm excited about this course, just to like build more healthy habits and kind of start my days out right. And just really excited to see how having an actual daily practice will really help with all the different aspects of my life.
Awesome. Glad you're here, Eric. Just very, very faint.
How about now?
Oh, yeah.
That's better. Okay.
Yes.
My name is Sheila, and this is my second time doing coming home, and I really appreciate sitting with you, Morgan, and with everyone else in the mornings. And I struggle to keep a regular morning routine, and so having this space is a really awesome way to kind of jumpstart back into it and get back into that habit, which is so beneficial in my life. So just really appreciate the opportunity to cultivate that and get back into that routine.
Thanks, Sheila. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
So, yeah, and then you all know me. My name's Morgan, and I'll give you a little bit, just briefly, my history. One, I just to finish the circle here, I love teaching this course. For a lot of the very same reasons that you talked about. I mean, I do have a daily practice and I have for a long time, for about 3 decades, but meditating on your own versus meditating together is it's just such a qualitatively different experience, as some of you alluded to. And I love the experience of being in a container where the group intention supercharges or really infuses the field of meditation. And that's something, I mean, I lived starting in 1998 for about 14 years. I lived in a monastic context and every day practiced with a large group of people at an ashram. and where I lived and I worked and I practiced, and we did from 2 to 14 hours of practice a day. It was intensive. And there was just there's just no question, when you meditate together, you are carried and you are uplifted and supported in that field by everyone's intention, and your own intention gets amplified. So I love teaching this course because my day is qualitatively different when I meditate all together with a group. And so selfishly, I'm in it for many of the same reasons, but also love teaching basic mindfulness. I got certified to teach this 2 years ago by a gentleman named David Nickturn, and he was a senior student of Trungpa Rinpoche. His organization is called Dharma Moon, and so Dharma Moon and Tibet House, which is the cultural home of the Dalai Lama in the United States, are the certifying body for that course. So, and that's a very different school than what I learned in. I learned in a tradition that comes from India. My lineage was Ramana Maharshi, and that whole teaching is very non-dual. So it's transcendent. Transcend, transcend, transcend. Let's get out of this world. And that was beautiful, and it had its like so many benefits, but there was a lot that it doesn't address, which basic mindfulness does. So in particular, when you just transcend all the time, you can leave yourself behind. I don't have to deal with Morgan, which sometimes is a great relief, you know? It's just like, I'm so over Morgan's neuroses. I'm just getting out of here, and I am going to pull the ripcord and just transcend and be in that beautiful, pristine, quiet place where nothing's wrong. Nothing ever could be wrong. Nothing's ever been wrong. And I think it's wonderful and important to have those experiences and to know that we can touch into that place. But then there's the reality of Morgan back here on Earth, who isn't necessarily evolving when, you know, he's just pulling the ripcord every day. And so what I learned with basic mindfulness is how to start working with my own hangups, my own anxieties, my own concerns, my own tension. And yeah, that really helped me to see, where am I stuck? You know, where am I hanging out in my mind, in my body? Where am I just, you know, where am I not moving? And also, I would say, as it's progressed, as I've learned more about basic mindfulness, probably the really single most important thing I've learned, which I didn't know anything about, was self-compassion. Like, I didn't learn anything about that in the ashram. And I didn't get it. I just thought, that seems kind of indulgent to me and a little narcissistic. And that was just because, for the most part, I was ignorant. I didn't understand that we live in a culture of, you know, of achievement and perfection and, you know, just go on to the next thing. And through the basic mindfulness lens, I just started to see there was a whole sort of unforgiving narrative or lens, a lot of it internalized from our culture, that really prevented or just made no space for self-compassion or self-friendliness. And I, through learning about basic mindfulness, I just started to see, oh, you don't really have that tool or that capacity to just give yourself some room or a break or even some love. Like, I just didn't even understand that. And through the practice, started to understand I started to shift the tone of my own inner narratives And as I did that, as I was a little more gentle with myself, I just really became aware of that absence and started to fill it with, for one thing, just more supportive self-talk. I started to identify those narratives and change them. And I just started to see a lot of my issues were characterized by that total absence of self-friendliness and self-compassion. And so I just, as you do that, and as you, and you'll learn this in this course, as you begin to objectify those self-critical narratives, the moment you start to do that, when your subjectivity becomes objective, you start to see that which you were previously embedded in, suddenly you can turn and go a different direction. You can change that tone. So yeah, that's a little bit about my history and relationship to why I'm here and why I love to teach this and why I think basic mindfulness is so important. As some of you know, like the history of my, just super brief history of mindfulness comes to us from Buddhism. It's about a 2,500 year old practice. And in that religious context, basic mindfulness is like the ground floor. When the monks come in and they start their practice and they start learning about Buddhism, it's the preliminary practice. It's the keystone or the flagstone upon which the whole practice and the sequence of more advanced practices is founded. It's built upon this basic mindfulness. It's really a core competency or an essential baseline skill. So that's what we're going to be learning, because it really informs all the other practices. If you can't really master basic mindfulness, you're not going to be able to go on and do those more advanced practices. Because as you will learn, there's two really essential skills that we learn in this course: steering and staying. So it's steering your attention back to the meditation object and then staying on that meditation object. And our meditation object is going to be the breath. So steering and staying, right? We need that for any kind of learning or any kind of mastery. And that's especially true with meditation, because meditation is the practice of working with our attention. So that's the basic short history from the religious historical perspective. If we look at it from a secular perspective, you can think about mindfulness like going to the gym. Right, we are going to build a new muscle. It's the muscle of our focused attention. And how do we build that muscle? We do it through reps, right? We exercise again and again that same move, which is bringing our attention away. We get distracted and then we bring it back. We get distracted, we wake up to that, and we bring it back. That's that steering and then staying on that meditation object. That's the whole practice. And we're going to get, but there's so much to say about it, but that's the core competency. That's what we're going to be learning. From a secular perspective, it's really just, we're building that muscle of our focused attention. So what is it? What is mindfulness? It is using the breath to be present. We ride the breath into the present moment, and we attend to whatever's arising in our experience non-judgmentally, right? That's the key. So non-judgmental, present moment awareness focused on the breath. It sounds simple, and it is. It's ridiculously simple, but it's not easy. And for all the reasons you said about why you want to be here, everyone kind of knows this, but putting it into practice and being consistent about it as we go through our lives, It's a completely different thing. Being truly mindful and awake to ourselves and to the world around us, it's just a big deal. Research tells us that most of us spend at least 50% of the time in a daydream, where our mind is just in mind wandering mode. And we're not really awake to what our mind's doing, but we're just off in that, whatever narrative it is, whatever the fantasy is. And that's not a problem. It's just our condition. That is sort of the default settings that we come with. So part of what we're trying to do with meditation practice is recondition ourselves to be more awake, to be more present. And as we do that, we really wake up to the power of the present moment. And we realize, oh, wow, this space, it's unbounded. It's unlimited. And then you start to pay attention. Well, how do I really feel when I'm very attuned to the present moment? How's the world look different? How do I relate to myself differently? What do I notice? So what are some of the benefits of mindfulness? Strength of mind, clarity of mind, stability of mind. Those are three of the big ones we like to emphasize. You could think about that as resilience in the face of stress or challenge. Equanimity, just through your life, in relationship to your own ever-changing ups and downs, the rising and falling tides of our inner experience as we navigate a world of chaos. And then insight, of course, just who am I really? What am I learning about myself? And then a lot of people experience just generally less reactivity in their lives, because as we develop this ground of mindfulness, as we plant our feet more deeply on that stable ground of mindfulness, we have something to fall back on. We start to trust that stable ground in ourselves. We have the breath. We come back to the breath. And we find, oh, I was starting to spin out there for a second. My nervous system was starting to spin up. But I'm just focusing on my breath, and I come right back to center. And then we start to get disorganized, but then we find, internally I'm organized again. Me personally, in terms of some of the benefits that I experience, I've implicitly been sharing a lot of those with you already, but I would say, and it's always changing, I would say, but one of the big ones that I as I was reflecting on talking about it this morning, I would say one of the biggest benefits that I derive from mindfulness practice right now is just this sort of ambient or global sense of being awake to my own resistance to life. Just finding sometimes that I'll just be going along in my day, and I'll take a moment, and I'll be aware, like, what is this rising tension in myself? And just suddenly aware that, like, there's a part of me that's just like, it's just like, no, just, it's too much. I don't, it's just all of it. Right. And it'll be interesting, because I'm not even aware I'm doing it, that in some way I'm just bearing down and I'm tightening and I'm defending against life. And in those moments, and all this happens in a split second. But then I'm just like, oh, release. And literally it's just like shedding a skin, and I can just drop all of it in a moment. And that's the benefit of my mindfulness practice, is just being awake to that resistance or that defense against life. And then from that place, I can just start to see, okay, what was there something in particular that I was just in the last, you know, couple hours or in the last 24 hours? Was there something that happened that I'm like tight and wound up about? Or is this just a global sense of just like too muchness? But whatever it is, the move is turning towards. And I just always find that's amazing. The shift of like defending, running away from, like getting away to like, wait a second, just take a pause, take a breath. This is what's happening. Just dropping it, but also there's something that really happens almost before you drop it, which is you turn towards it. And I go into it. I'm like, what is this? Feel it. Like, let me feel this completely. And then it you know, the interesting thing is it's just almost some of it's the inertia and the habituation of unconsciousness. You turn towards whatever this thing is that you're avoiding with open arms and an open heart. And like, oh, this isn't so bad. I'm actually have no idea what I was just resisting, but I was in this state of resistance, but no, I turn towards it and I try and feel it with everything I've got. I just try and feel it, go deeply into it, feel it in my body. What is it? And so, yeah, I would say that is a huge game-changing benefit for me of mindfulness. It's just, you could just say feeling what I'm feeling, just letting myself feel it. So there, in the practice that we're learning here and that we're going to be doing every day, excuse me, there's three steps. One is taking the seat. The next is finding our breath. And then the third is that once we find that our attention is wandering away from the breath, we label it thinking and come back. So those are the three steps that we're going to be practicing and unpacking together here on the cushion. But in this container that we're creating together, we're also going to explore beyond the perimeter of our practice, what's happening? Where do you see the benefits of this move, of this awakening to the present moment? Where do you find that impacting your life every day? What do you start to notice? What's changing? Because we're planting seeds with this practice, and if we believe that the law of karma, the law of cause and effect is real, that for every action there's a reaction, then we can have confidence that these seeds that we're planting in our practice are bearing fruit. And I know from my experience of doing this practice for as long as I have, it will bear fruit. It's inevitable. So we want to build this container together on the cushion. And then we want to, over time, we're going to expand that container like concentric rings wider and wider to include more dimensions of our life so that eventually nothing's outside the container, right? We're living a mindful life where everything is included. Our aspiration, our intention is full inclusivity. We want to be fully awake to ourselves and to the world around us. Kathy asks, when you say feeling, is that physically in my body or emotionally or both? It's both. It's definitely the somatic dimension. It gives us all these cues. It's always communicating. So we're using that interoceptive awareness and intelligence. Interoception, that's that That's that skill. If that's a new word for you, that's that capacity that we have to tune into our physical somatic experience. It's all those nerve receptors on all our organs that are constantly communicating with our brain. And that's so like, that's what allows you to become aware of your own pulse or your own heart rate, interoception. So we use interoception as a somatic sense making. It is our somatic sense making apparatus or capacity. But yeah, Kathy, you want both, and you know, and again, all of this is an investigation. So you're going to want to experiment. You're just going to want to say, you're tuning in and you're being like, whoa, what is this for me? Because I'm going to share certain things with you all, but we are all different. We all have different experiences of all of it, of everything I'm talking about. And your practice is going to have the unique character of your history, of your particular trajectory through life, your own traumas, your own victories, all of that. So yeah, this is fundamentally about your own inquiry. And this is really about providing general tools and guideposts. So cool. In terms of, I want to go through these three steps. So taking our seat. So like, just on a basic level, when we sit down on our cushion, you want to, I'm just close the chat. You want to be elevated so that your hips are above your knees. So Sheila, it looks like you're on a couch. Some people are sitting on a cushion. The main thing is you want to be able to have a generally erect spine. You want, you're obviously, because our spines are curved, you can't be completely straight, but you want to be able to lift. So having that support behind your lower back, if you're sitting on a couch or a chair, that might be helpful.
I'm sort of kneeling with,
yeah, which is great.
Not a bench, but like in the same shape as a bench, because otherwise my legs, if I do like cross-legged, my legs fall asleep easily.
Yeah,
I've been sitting in that position for a long time, but I'm like moving and like, you know.
And that's important what Sheila is bringing in. Like you don't want to be in pain. You need to attend to your body. It's not going to really, you know, we're not in a monastery. So you're not, the point isn't to sit through a lot of pain. And then like, that's not right now the resilience that I'm talking about. We want, you just want to be able to create a seating situation which is conducive to lift, right? So your spine is lifted. Otherwise, even a subtle slump in your back, it contributes to a certain it can make you sleepy or drowsy. And the whole point of the practice is to become more awake. And so lifting your spine up to the sky is really going to be the most conducive to general awakeness. It's also sending a message to your body. When that's your intention, your body and your awareness, they're all going to respond. And you know, not to get too focused on that, but I will find a dramatic difference. Sometimes I don't even realize it. I've just got this little bit of bend in my lower back as I'm meditating. And then when I lift and I straighten up, it's like, the sort of clarity and lucidity of my mind will just brighten. And it's from posture. Posture has a very big effect on our general quality of awakeness. So yeah, hips above the knees. That's the general idea, because that will help with a little bit of forward rotation in your hips. And that will, that forward rotation will help you lift. And so when we take our seat, we work from the bottom up. So we start with our attention down at where we're making contact with the ground. And we start with a hand mudra, which is the grounding mudra, which is just palms flat on our knees or our thighs. This is really good. You can just literally imagine your like roots or tendrils extending down through your fingertips into the ground. Like we use the metaphor of a tree, just shooting those roots down, rooted into the earth, and then lifting up. But a tree, as you know, is supple, right? It, there's a little bit of give with the wind and the elements. So likewise, as we lift up, it's not rigid, right? It's supple. So we want to have a very strong back, but a soft front. So we're lifting, and you know, there's that metaphor of like a stack of coins, right? A stack of coins all the way up to the crown of your head where there's a string pulling you up and lifting you. So we have this soft front and a strong back, and we're lifting. And we're going to do a lot of grounding exercises during these 4 weeks. As we go into our practice, we're going to be doing some breathing, some humming. We're going to lie down and really melt into the earth before we start our practice sometimes, because I want to give you that sense of how conducive it is to ground before we go into the practice, before we start the basic mindfulness. Because grounding in the body, it reminds us this whole meditation thing, it's a full body activity. It's not from the shoulders up, which is what our default is, because the attentional system in our culture is so locked in up here. And part of what we're trying to do is bring that attentional system down into the heart system. We sort of relax this space between our eyes, which is where a lot of our attentional system is kind of habitually located, between those eyes where the pineal gland is, or the third eye. And we relax that and literally physically feel our attention dropping into our heart center. And that takes practice. In the beginning, you might visualize that happening, but eventually you really want a felt sense of that. And we do our practice from here, from our heart. So these breathing and chanting and lying down exercises that we're going to be doing before we meditate are really about coming into the body, getting out of the head and coming into the body. And then when we sit, the reason that's so important is it will help all our sense gates are going to be open. Our eyes, our ears, our smell, our sensing, our feeling, all of it's our taste, all those gates we keep open. We're not closing everything out. Our focused attention isn't so tight like it is in some practices. It's wider. It's a wider beam. It's not a narrow beam. And we'll talk more about that. And we're also, because I want you to have an understanding of the difference between those two, we are going to do a few practices where we really narrow the beam of our focused attention on the breath. And we're going to get so, so close to the breath, and we're going to block out everything else. But we're only going to do that so that then you have that as a reference point for what we're doing in the practice generally, which is really 50% on the breath and 50% just open, just allowing experience and sensation to arise. And then you're just attending non-judgmentally to all of it. So as we go up the body in terms of taking our seat, our gaze in this practice is open, which is a lot of meditation that people learn is closed eyes meditation. But as you're learning on the ground level, as we're starting this practice, the eyes open meditation helps us. Well, one, it's a metaphor for this really being a practice about life, lived life, right? We're not just going away and getting out. But what we do is we soften the gaze. We let the gaze fall down, like, and then we take in the whole periphery, the whole field of our vision, and it's soft. And that's important because our eyes are just the strongest sort of, in a certain way, in terms of our sense gates, it's the strongest in terms of control and survival, right? Because we, you know, as a species, in terms of our survival instincts, you know, our vision has given us, like, it gives us the capacity to navigate danger. But when we soften the gaze, it stimulates something called the oculocardiac reflex. So softening the gaze sends a really powerful message to our parasympathetic nervous system. And there is this body or this reflex called the OCR, which connects to our vagus nerve, right? And when it fires, there's this immediate relaxation. And if you want to, one exercise that can help with this in the beginning is you can, like, to open the field of your gaze, you can put your thumbs out and just track them as they're going out to the sides. You're tracking the thumbs with your peripheral vision until they reach the periphery of your vision. And just hold that open gaze. So you're holding the thumbs in your peripheral vision. And you can release that, but now you've opened the field of your visual attention and gaze, and then you can just lower the eyes down and keep that whole peripheral vision open, right? And soft gaze, gentle. So yeah, I think we covered most of what I wanted to say about taking the seat. So then, so the one other thing is stillness. So as much as we want to have a certain supple quality in the posture, I also emphasize, like, lift, right? Just lifting the spine upright, but not uptight. But stillness is something you may find can be an incredibly powerful catalyst for quietude. So if you put your attention on just being completely still, you will find, not always, but often, at first there might be tension, but being still and relaxed, because you let go of that tension, you will find there's a corresponding inner stillness. It's like, sometimes it's like going through the looking glass. If, you know, your mind can be all over the place, but if you become physically very still and at the same time, you're not rigid, you're relaxed, but completely still, you get to this sort of perfect middle place, not too tight, not too loose. And it has this profound inner impact where you enter into, you can almost like lock in to a very profound state of inner stillness. And that inner stillness, just, you will just find yourself falling deep, deep, deep into yourself, into the quiet, into the stillness. So it's something to keep in mind. I'm not going to put a lot of emphasis on that as we practice, but, you know, keep that in your quiver, as it were. It's something to experiment with. Stillness is super powerful. The flip side is you can get too tense and too rigid with it. So you don't want to do that. if you're focusing on stillness, you just make sure you're easy at the same time and relaxed. So then we move to finding our breath. So we take our seat, then we find our breath. We very gently, almost you could say like with the very tip of your attention, you rest it on your breath. You find it and you just gently alight on your breath. And that can be the whole sort of undulation or cycle of the breath in your body. I prefer to put my attention on the sensation of the breath passing through the nostrils, passing through the channel of your nose, because it's very, you can feel that. You can feel the wind, the air passing through your nostrils. So that's what we're talking about. The roof of your nostrils, the floor of your nostrils, the inner outer sides of the nostrils, the back of your skull, the very top of the breath, the very bottom of the breath out here in front of your nostrils. So when we're doing our practice, we find the breath and we feel it. That's what I mean by finding the breath. You feel the passage of your breath through, I'm going to refer to it as the channel. But so the channel really just means your two nostrils, your inner nose. So you're feeling the passage of the air through the channel. You want to be really gentle about that. The cool thing about your breath as a meditation object is that it's elusive. It's really easy to lose it, but it's always there, so you can always come back to it. But it's like the wind. It's there, but it's not there, right? So it really requires steady attention to stay with the breath. So that's what we're going to do, 50% on the breath, and then just 50% open and relaxed. So then we go to our third step, which is you find the breath and you're with the breath. And then you're going to notice within, it's going to be less than 60 seconds, your attention just drifts. It's going to go to something else. You're going to start to think about what you have to do today. You're going to think about Costa Rica. You're going to think about, you know, my daughter's waking up. You're going to think about, you know, the next performance coming. Like whatever it is, your mind's going to go to whatever it wants to think about. So the moment you notice that that's happening, you just label it thinking and redirect your attention back to the breath. And so that's really, you know, that's the heart and soul of this practice, is that moment where we notice we're lost, we label it thinking, and we come back to the breath. So that moment when we label our thoughts thinking, that's an act of letting go. Because usually we follow that train of thought, right? We're just in the thought stream. And we're going. But in this moment, we notice it, label that thinking, and you use a really kind and self-friendly tone, because it's not a problem to be lost. It is the point to wake up and come back. So there's all these little mini awakenings, 10, 100, 1,000 times every practice. Oh, I'm lost. Thinking, come back. Thinking. Come back. That's the rep. That's what, now we're in the gym and we're exercising that move that builds our focused awareness, our focused attention. So, and it's really important to say, we all are going to end up in Timbuktu. We're just going to be gone, and we're going to be gone for 5, 10, 15 minutes, and we're not even going to be aware that we're gone and lost in daydreaming. And then there'll always be that moment where you're like, oh, I'm lost in thought, and I come back to the breath. It doesn't matter how far or how long you've been gone. It's always the same move. You just label it thinking, come back. And then you're right back. You're right back to the moment. It's also important to remember that this whole exercise, all of this, all these three steps, you don't want to get lost in any, like, you don't want to just get lost and over intense on the breath. You don't want to get lost and overly focused on labeling thoughts, thinking. The whole point is just to be present. And sometimes you can get so wrapped up in following the instructions that you lose the forest for the trees. You just lose the plot and you're like, oh, I didn't even realize I'm just so kind of tense around just trying to follow these instructions that I'm actually not just like totally attentive to just being here, right? It's present moment awareness focused on the breath without bias. And then I'm just here. I'm just awake. So it's just sitting. And it's good to remind ourselves of that because it's very easy to just, you know, there's about as many thoughts as there are in our heads, there are ways to get lost in this practice. But the three steps provide us with a way to not get lost. And some of these tips are ways to also not get lost. We just want to be here. We just want to be awake. It's, you know, keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate any of it. And, you know, the beauty of meditation practice is its simplicity. If you find that you're thinking too much or worrying about, am I doing it right? All of that is also just thinking. So you can just let all of that, you can just label all of that thinking. You don't have to analyze your practice or get involved with it. You just label that thinking, come back to your breath. So, questions. That's a lot of content. This first day, I just need to kind of go through all of these instructions and just give you the layout of the practice. And there's a lot there, but how's it all landing? Like reflections, is it some of this familiar for you? Does it resonate? Do you have questions? So all making sense generally. Yeah. Okay. Thumbs up. Cool. All right. Okay. Many thumbs up. All right. So we've got about 10 minutes left. So what I think would be nice to do is just sit for a little bit together. Usually what we'll do when we start practice, we're going to do some of these embodiment practices. So we'll start with that tomorrow morning. We're going to do a humming practice before we start. But because we don't have much time, we'll just sit together for 5 minutes and put into practice everything we just talked about. So let's start by taking our seat. Can you just come into your body? Palms face down on your thighs. Feel the seat where your sit bones connecting to the couch, the cushion, your chair. Just let yourself release into the earth, into the ground. Just gently scan your body. And if you notice any tension, just let that melt, soften, and release. Just let gravity do its job, pulling any tension out of you, just releasing through the floor into the earth. And lifting up out of your pelvis and your hips, lifting up through your spine, soften the belly, soften the shoulders, let your shoulder blades release and draw down. You tuck your chin just slightly, just to further open the back of the neck. Release your jaw. You hold a lot of tension there. Release your Adam's apple. Soften that space between your eyes. Just feel your attention dropping down into your heart center. Keep releasing into the ground. And your eyes now are open but lowered. Gaze is soft. You're taking in the periphery, the whole wide field of attention. Soft. And now find your breath. The giving and the receiving, the breath. Feel the sensation, the winds passing through the channel. Keep softening, let your body release. Approaching the breath is like, it's almost like approaching a doe in the forest. You don't want to scare it. You just, the gentle approach, no tension. Softly landing on the breath. And riding it. And when you notice your attention drifting into thought, just label that thinking. And just very gently come back to your breath. as we attend to the breath. We're also awake to the present moment. The whole field of information that is your body. Sensations, sounds, just noticing and letting everything be just as it is. And the breath is our tether. Keeps us anchored in the moment. Now, come back into the body. Take a deep breath. And we bow to the circle to close and seal our practice. Deep breath. So, some of you know this poem, The Guest House, but it's really a beautiful tone setter for the course, the practice. It's a poem by Rumi, and it goes, "This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house, empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond." As Sheila and Eric both know, I have that framed up on my wall here because it's such a powerful invocation of the spirit that we want to bring to this practice. And, you know, if there was a banner that we could hang above this container that we're creating together, this would be it. We'd have that poem on it because that's what we're really trying to do, is just welcome all of ourselves to the banquet table. So before we close, does anyone have any questions? Again, we're going to be every morning, we're going to be meeting. We're just going to be practicing. On Mondays, we'll do longer practice or a longer session like this one where we'll talk about some of the concepts. But you know, we only had time for like 8 minutes of practice this morning, but it's really important to just set the stage for the whole thing. Any questions or anything? And Sheila from Ithaca, everything good? How's it all landing for you?
Good. So I think I spent most of that time steering.
Cool. Excellent.
So, yeah. So, but yeah, no, good. So just one sort of housekeeping question.
Yeah. Yes.
Be able to make it. Do you want us to let you know, or just if you have a few conflicts?
Yeah, I think if you can let me know, it's great. I it's helpful just to know. But yeah, that would be wonderful. And yeah, everyone else good? Questions, or we're all good? Okay. If you have to go, I just want to finish with this last quick quote from Gary Snyder about the path. So he says, all of us are apprenticed to the same teacher that the religious institutions originally worked with, reality. Reality Insight says, master the 24 hours. Do it well without self-pity. It is as hard to get the children herded into the carpool and down the road to the bus as it is to chant sutras in the Buddha hall on a cold morning. One move is not better than the other. Each can be quite boring, and they both have the virtuous quality of repetition. Repetition and ritual and their good results come in many forms. Changing the filter, wiping noses, going to meetings, picking up around the house, washing dishes, checking the dipstick. Don't let yourself think these are distracting you from your more serious pursuits. Such a round of chores is not a set of difficulties we hope to escape from so that we may do our practice, which will put us on a path. It is our path. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. We will see you in the morning.
Can you put that book in the chat?
The quote?
Yeah, where was it from?
Yeah.
That was really good.
You know, I have no idea.
Okay.
But I'm going to put it in the chat. And also, I will post it in the course area and I'll send it out in the email.
Oh, cool. It's good. I like it.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Have a great day.
All right. Bye, you guys.